This is Penny Radio. Thank you for tuning in. I'm James Whittington, and I'm here to help you master your money. Whether you're a complete beginner or have been around the block once or twice, now is the time to start your journey and take control of your finances. And I'll be with you every step of the way. Hello and welcome to episode 9 of the Personal Finance Podcast, Penny Radio. I'm here to help you to master your money and take control of your financial future. So last week we discussed taxes and I recommended that you had a look at a few things after the episode. How did you get on? Did you find this easy? Or was it a typical bureaucratic pain in the ass to do? Was the information easy enough for you to understand? What did you make of your national insurance record? Don't worry if you have an incomplete record, because we'll be discussing the state pension in a future episode on what to do if this is the case. Get in touch with me to let me know how you get on. I'm always interested to hear. You can do so via the contact page at pennyradio.co.uk or email me at james@pennyradio.co.uk and I'll try and help you with any questions that you've got. So as I promised, we're going to be having a bit of a break from the technical stuff today, and instead we're going to build on what we already know about bank accounts, interest, compounding and tax to look at what wrappers and platforms are. And no, this isn't when M&M has a wardrobe malfunction. I'm also going to touch upon what the difference is between savings and investments as well. So let's get straight into it then. A wrapper is just an account, very similar to a bank account. However, there are a couple of key differences. The first one is that you can hold different asset types in a wrapper, whereas usually you can only hold cash in a bank account. We're going to be looking at the different asset types in more detail when we discuss investment portfolios, as we build up our financial frameworks. But for now, the kind of assets I'm referring to are shares in companies, government and corporate bonds, cash, and funds. Now, when I say funds, they aren't really a separate asset type. Funds are basically big pots of money that come from lots and lots of individuals like you and me. A fund manager then uses this money to invest in lots of different things on mine and your behalf. It means that you don't have to work out what to buy and sell, and to actually do the trading, because someone does it for you, obviously for a fee, but it means that you can invest in very small amounts, and therefore access a wide variety of investments for a relatively small amount of money. One of the benefits of this is that, say you wanted to invest in the shares of Apple, Facebook, Google, Amazon and Tesla, well, at today's prices it would cost you around £3,800 just to buy one share in each of these big five names. But because the fund collects all the small amounts of money from lots of different investors, it can buy these shares on behalf of the investors. And then it sells a share or a unit of that fund from potentially as little as a few pounds. And each share or unit of that fund would own a fraction of a share in each of the companies in that fund. So for a couple of quid, you could own a little bit of all of those big names for a fraction of the price. So you'd get a fraction of a share in Google, a fraction of a share in Apple, a fraction of a share in Facebook, a fraction of a share in Amazon, and a fraction of a share in Tesla. But it means that you still get access to these companies without having to fork out that massive £3,800 up front. Now, there are thousands of funds out there, and they all have a theme. There are about 100 or more themes out there that a fund can choose to adopt. From buying the top 100 shares in the UK, the top 500 in the US, to buying shares from all over the world. You can also invest in funds that cover specific industries like biotech, finance, mining. There are funds that invest in just shares, just bonds, just property, just cash, or there are multi-asset funds that invest in a bit of all asset types. And funds can have from as little as 15 different investments or shares up to hundreds and hundreds. So this allows you to diversify or to spread your risk between different things, so that if one goes wrong, you haven't lost all your money. So by investing in a fund, you get that expertise of the fund manager, you can sit back and relax and let them do all the hard work for you, and you get to spread your risk as well, and get access to things that you wouldn't otherwise get access to. So that's why people invest in funds. And you can hold these funds along with assets like shares and bonds, all within a wrapper, whereas you can't really hold them in a bank account. The second main difference between a wrapper and a bank account is that a wrapper wraps all your investments up into one imaginary box that has magical powers. Okay, well, not quite magical powers, but when it comes to finance, about as magical as you can get, because the box usually protects your investments from tax. So this is what we were talking about in the last episode when we were talking about tax-efficient environments and tax-efficient accounts. It's just a fancy way of saying that you pay less or no tax compared to if you held the same assets outside of the magical box. and remember from the last episode just how much tax you could end up paying on the different asset types if you bought and sold them outside of a wrapper, or outside of that tax-efficient environment. By using your wrapper to invest in different asset types, it means that you can see them all in one place, because otherwise you're just investing in them individually, and then you've just got a share here, a share there, some funds here, some funds there, but you can't see how they're all performing in one place. A wrapper lets you do that, because basically you just log into your wrapper and you see the performance of each individual investment within there, and see how they're doing individually, but then you can see how they're doing overall as well. Now, there is something that's called a general investment account that's kind of a hybrid between a wrapper and a bank account. You can hold different investment types in it like you can a wrapper, but it just doesn't have that magical anti-tax power that a tax-efficient wrapper has. Investments in a general investment account get taxed in the same way that we looked at in the last episode, and in the same way as if we just held them individually. Now, we need to remember that the wrapper itself just holds the investments, and so therefore isn't an investment itself. Just like a bank account holds your bank account isn't your investment, the cash is the investment. So here, the wrapper holds our investments. Think of it like a packet of licorice all sorts. The investments in the assets themselves are the individual sweets. The bag is the wrapper that lets you hold the sweets or the investments. Within the wrapper, you can hold a variety of different types of licorice all sorts. Just like a wrapper lets you hold different assets and asset types. You don't just get one type of sweet, or even just one sweet in a packet of licorice all sorts. You get loads of different types and you get loads of sweets. And it's the same with an investment wrapper. You get loads of different types of investments and loads of different investments as well. And just like the licorice all sorts packet that protects your sweets from somebody nibbling a small percentage from each one of them, your investment wrapper will protect your investments from the tax man nibbling a small percentage off each one of those as well. Now, as you can probably tell by the way that I described a fund is actually very similar to a wrapper. You can actually hold a fund in a wrapper. So to extend our sweet analogy, this would be like a big multi-pack bag of sweets. The giant bag is the wrapper, and then the individual packets of sweets inside are the funds, and then the individual sweets themselves are the investments. Now, this may seem like a lot of layers of confusion, but actually there's a lot of benefits to holding your investments in this setup. Like I said earlier, there's all the benefits of a fund, in that you can get a fund manager to invest on your behalf, you can access different investments that you wouldn't be able to get yourself, you can invest in specific themes that you like, and then you get the benefits of the wrapper, so you get to hold everything in one place, you get to see your performance, you can hold funds and separate shares and separate bonds in the same wrapper, and you get the best benefit of all, you get the tax protection of the wrapper. Traditionally, these wrappers were offered by an investment company, and they usually only let you put one or several of their own funds in it. Now, however, investment companies often offer the ability to hold not only their own funds in a wrapper, but many offer you the ability to also hold a range of other investment company funds too. This is as well as letting you hold shares and bonds within the wrapper as well, as long as you buy them through that company. So, for example, a wrapper from Aviva will offer you the ability to hold its own Aviva funds, but might also let you hold funds from fund managers like BlackRock, Aberdeen Asset Management, and 7IM in the wrapper as well. Now, the two main wrappers that we're interested in are pensions and ISAs. ISA stands for Individual Savings Account, and you've probably heard of both of those before. They're both useful to us in securing our financial future and our financial health, but they have different uses, and therefore we can use them for different financial goals. Pensions are much more longer term and are more associated with when we're going to retire, and ISAs are useful for more short and medium term goals, although you can also use them for longer term goals as well. There are a few other differences between pensions and ISAs as well, such as how you get your money into and out of the accounts and how it is taxed on each side. In other words, the way that the money that you put into your accounts is treated for tax when you pay it in, and then the way that it's taxed when you take it out. There are also some differences in what you're allowed to invest in pensions and ISAs. So pensions let you hold a wider variety of asset types, but for almost everyone the differences of what you can hold are irrelevant, because the main things that we really want to invest in are shares, bonds, cash and funds, and you can invest in those in both of them. Now, the way that your investments are taxed within the wrappers is the same, so it's the same within an ISA as it is within a pension, because you don't pay any tax on interest income, dividend income or capital gains within either a pension or an ISA. Think back to that episode where we talked about compound interest. The more money you have and the longer you leave it, the bigger and the faster it grows. Using ISAs and pensions allows the compounding effect of both investment income and reinvesting dividend income to work at maximum capacity for you. That's because let's say that you're a higher rate taxpayer and that you'd normally get 40% tax on your interest income. This means that the effect of compounding would be massively reduced. It wouldn't be as effective because let's say you earn 5% interest a year, a 40% tax charge on that reduces it down to only 3% outside of a wrapper. So if you had £10,000 in a wrapper and held it for 30 years, earning 5% a year, using our compounding formula, after this time it would be worth £43,219. Whereas holding it outside a wrapper, with tax reducing your 5% down to 3%, your £10,000 would only be worth £24,272, almost half as much as holding it in a wrapper. That's because you're earning less interest on less interest. Whereas within a wrapper, you're earning more interest on more interest because it's not being reduced by tax. Now, I'm not going to go into too much detail on pensions today because they're complicated and probably need at least one episode, if not more, just to cover the basics. But at a very high level, you can put a maximum of £40,000 a year into a pension. The amount that you put in is called your contribution, and your contributions get a tax relief boost on the way in, and on the way out, you get 25% tax-free, with the rest being taxed depending on whatever tax bracket it falls into when you add it to all your other income when you take the money out of your pension. And like I said, there's no tax on the investment income and returns within the pension. ISAs, on the other hand, get no tax relief boost on the way in, so arguably you can afford to put in less because you're putting in earnings that have already been taxed, so you might be putting in money that has already been taxed at 40%. However, it doesn't get taxed on the way out when you take the money out of an ISA. And like with pensions, your investment income and your returns don't get taxed within the ISA. Every person aged 18 or over can put in up to £20,000 a year into ISAs. If you're under 16, you're able to put in £4,368 a year into a junior ISA. And if you're 16 or 17, you can put in that £4,368 a year into a junior ISA and £20,000 a year into a cash ISA. There are four main types of ISA available to people aged 18 and over. The first is a cash ISA, which is basically just a savings account protected from paying tax on the interest. And there are as many types of cash ISA as there are savings accounts. If you ever helped to buy ISA, which are now no longer available to open for new investors, but if you have one already, it's classed as a cash ISA. The second type of ISA is a stocks and shares ISA. This lets you hold shares, corporate and government bonds, cash and funds within it. The range of available investments and funds that you can hold within the ISA will depend on whatever provider that you're using. For example, robo-investors will let you choose from a handful of portfolios, or they'll pick a portfolio for you based on a series of questions that you answer, and they'll manage the investments within this portfolio for you. So basically, they'll be controlling what assets are held in your ISA based on what portfolio that they pick for you. Whereas at the other end of the scale, other providers let you buy and sell any share listed on different stock exchanges around the world, and you have full control over what is in your ISA. The third ISA type is called an innovative finance ISA, and this lets you hold peer-to-peer loans that pay you an interest rate. So this is where you're lending money to small private businesses and individuals for whatever activities they want to borrow money for. The ISA provider will usually find the people or small businesses that want the loans, and then you can offer to lend to them a part of that loan, along with lots of other investors as well. The loans are quite risky and it can be quite hard to get your money back when you want it, as the loans can last for several years and you'll need to find another investor to buy your part of the loan off you if you want to get your money out. Alternatively, some of the ISA providers in this type of ISA will let you invest in a portfolio of a lot of different types of loans that they put together and manage for you. Normally they'll offer a lower return and a higher fee for this than if you did it yourself, but at least then you don't have to worry about it, and they're more likely to pick a diversified selection of loans, which means you're less likely to lose as much of your money if stuff starts going wrong. These types of ISAs, and peer-to-peer loans in general, are only a couple of years old and really are untested in a big recession so far, so you have to be careful if you decide that these types of investments are for you. The last ISA type is also pretty new. It's what's called a lifetime ISA, or a LISA for short. Now, I know a few LISAs, and I definitely wouldn't trust them with my money, and that includes my mother-in-law. Luckily, she doesn't listen to this. But anyway, this type of LISA can be quite useful in certain circumstances. You could either pick a cash or a stocks and shares LISA. And whatever money you put into it, the government actually pays you a 25% bonus on top about a month later, which is like getting basic rate tax back on the money that you put in there. At the moment, you can only use a lifetime ISA to buy a house for first-time buyers, or take it out once you reach 60, or both. Now, you can access the money outside of these situations, but you have to give the government bonus back and any interest you made on the bonus. And on top of this, you've got to pay a 5% charge on the money that you take out, as in your money, plus 5% on the government bonus, so it can be really costly. However, you can access it before 60. 18 to 39 year olds can open a lifetime ISA, and you can pay your money and get a bonus up to the age of 50. Now, you're allowed to invest up to a maximum of £4,000 a year into a lifetime ISA, so that means you could get a government bonus of up to £1,000 a year paid in as well. Not bad, eh? In one tax year, and remember, a tax year goes from April the 6th one year to April the 5th the next year, you can invest in one of each type of these ISAs. So that means you can take out 4 new ISAs a year. If you carry on investing in an old ISA, for example an old cash ISA, you can't open a new cash ISA in the same tax year. If you decide to open a new cash ISA in a tax year, you're allowed to keep all your old cash ISAs still open, you're just not allowed to put any money in them. So basically, you can only physically put money in one of each types of these ISAs in each tax year. And in each tax year, you can put up to £20,000 into ISAs in total, in whatever proportion you want. So for example, you could put all £20,000 in the stocks and shares ISA, or split it between the different types, although remember you can only put a maximum of £4,000 into a lifetime ISA, and the government bonus doesn't count towards your £20,000 limit. Now there's a few complicated rules around how to take the money out and put it in, but basically you can take money out of your current year ISA and replace it in the same tax year, in the same ISA, without it counting twice against your allowance. So say you put £10,000 into an ISA, took it out again in the same tax year, and then put it back in again, you'd still have £10,000 left of your yearly ISA allowance. It wouldn't count as two lots of £10,000 and therefore £20,000, it would just count as one lot. However, if you took money out of an ISA from a previous year and put it back into an ISA in this current tax year, it would count towards your £20,000 a year ISA allowance. To avoid this, if you do want to change ISA providers, all you have to do is transfer part or all of your old ISA or all of a current ISA to a new provider. You can change ISA types at the same time. So you could transfer an old cash ISA to a stocks and shares ISA or to another cash ISA paying a better rate. To transfer, you have to fill out a form for your new ISA provider and they'll move the money for you. If you take the money out of your old ISA yourself and then put it into a new ISA, it will count towards your annual ISA allowance. But if you get the providers to transfer it for you, it won't count towards your allowance. So the golden rule is transfer, don't withdraw. Then you get to keep all those lovely tax benefits that the government has given you. So, should you put your money into an ISA or a pension? Well, the answer depends on your circumstances, but it's usually both. We're going to look at ISAs versus pensions when it comes to finalising our financial framework, and I'll use that opportunity to highlight different situations where you may want to prioritise one over the other. But for now, the important thing is to remember that these are wrappers and not the actual investments. They hold your investments. They protect them from ongoing tax and let you grow your wealth faster by making the most of your best financial friend, compounding, rather than giving it a tough gig to start off with. Now this is probably the time to bring up the other drain on your wealth and a barrier to your financial health, fees. These have the same effect as tax. They hamper the growth of your investments. Luckily they are not as big as tax charges, but they are unavoidable, unlike tax. Pension and ISA providers will charge you an ongoing fee for the pleasure of opening and holding a wrapper. These are usually less than 1%, or they may be a fixed charge like a fiver a month. When working out what wrapper provider to choose for your ISA or your pension, you should look for a provider with the lowest fees that still lets you hold what you want in your wrapper, but no more than necessary, and one that has a good reputation and that meets your needs as well. Now most people won't hold individual shares in their wrapper, so there's no need to pay for this if you won't use it. Now the rule of thumb is that a percentage fee is better if you have a small amount invested, and a fixed fee is better if you have a large amount invested. Because a fiver a month on a £100 investment is 5% a month, but on a £1 million investment is only 0.0005% a month, which is better than say a 1% fee a year. But you'll find that the more you invest, the lower rate of fees you qualify for. For example, you may pay 1% if you invest £100,000, but only 0.5% if you invest more. and some providers will charge you a mix of fixed and percentage fees. So you have to work out the cost of each provider for yourself and the amount that you want to invest. Comparison sites can help, but may not look at all the fees. For example, the provider may charge you an ongoing management fee, a charge each time you buy, a charge each time you sell an investment, a fee for reinvesting your interest in dividends, and it can add up really quickly, but it's really hard to compare unless you know how often you're going to be buying and selling investments, how many funds you want to open, all that kind of stuff. But the rule of thumb is that you need to make sure that you know what you're going to be paying before you sign up. Some providers also charge an exit fee as well, so you have to be aware of that. In other words, they'll charge you to take your money out or to transfer it to another provider. On top of the fees that your wrapper provider will charge you, if you invest in funds within your wrapper, you'll also get charged an annual management fee by the fund manager for the cost of running the fund. Plus, they might also charge you other fees as well, like to buy or sell the investments on your behalf. Funds have to tell you the OCF, or the ongoing charges figure, as a percentage, so that this will highlight the majority of the charges that you will have to pay to invest in a fund. So this OCF will help you compare the charges of investing in different funds. Bear in mind that bog standard funds that just track an index like the FTSE 100, as in the largest 100 companies on the London Stock Exchange, are the cheapest. Whereas specialist funds that are actively managed and may have a focus on a specific sector like the marijuana sector or a specific geography or asset type are normally the most expensive. So you need to add up all the fees that you pay on your wrapper, your funds and your investments and take these fees off your returns. Now this can typically vary between 0.75% and 2% of your total investment per year, which may not sound like a lot, but if it's 2% and your returns for the year are 5%, it reduces them down to 3%, and it's the same as paying a 40% tax, therefore undoing all the good work that your tax wrapper is doing for you. And don't forget about that evil force inflation as well, because that's going to be working against you in the background. So if inflation is 3% for the year, it would wipe out all of your gains. And what about if you made a loss on your investments for the year? Well, you still have to pay the fees, and inflation will just kick you whilst you're down, making a bad year even worse. So you need to aim for the lowest fees possible while still meeting your needs, and combine this with reducing or avoiding tax altogether. And this will let compounding just go and do its thing in securing your financial future. So, that's wrappers in a nutshell, or a packet of sweets. What about platforms? What are these? Well, platforms are online dashboards that allow you to open, hold and invest in different accounts and different account types. Traditionally, these are provided by big financial institutions to let you see and manage all your accounts that you hold with them in one place. My cynical view is that they use this opportunity to cross-sell you other products that you may have held with other providers or not even had to start with. So a classic example of a platform is one that Aviva provides. They offer something called My Aviva. On My Aviva, you can open, hold and invest in personal pensions, ISAs, general investment accounts, all in the same place. It also lets you buy your home, travel, health, car insurance on there as well. And it allows you to access your policies and all your documentation in one place. You can apply for equity release and even apply for an investment product with another provider too. Now, I'm not trying to sell you Aviva or anything like that, because a lot of the big financial institutions out there do the same thing. So just go to the website of one of the financial institutions that you use, like your bank or whatever, and see what they offer for a platform. You'll probably find it's very similar to what I've just described. Now the main benefit of using a platform is that it makes it easier to keep track of everything. And if you want to make a specific investment, you can choose which wrapper to put it in. Platforms let you see your total wealth and easily track your overall performance and see exactly what you're invested in. Now a lot of platform providers will only offer their own products, and they won't usually charge you a fee for this because they want you to invest in their products. Now though, with the drive for something called open banking, this lets third-party providers provide you with a dashboard that you can then add all of the different bank accounts that you have, like cash accounts and savings accounts, onto that dashboard with all different companies, all different banks, and so that then you can see them all in one place. Now, open banking only covers bank accounts at the moment, but I'm pretty sure in the future we're going to see lots of different investment products on there too. So theoretically, your dashboard could show you all your different pensions that you've got with different workplaces over the years, your different bank accounts, your different investment accounts, all with different companies, all in one place. We're not there yet, but I'm pretty sure we'll be there in the near future. Now, third parties won't provide this for free, So it would be up to you to work out how they actually make their money. Are they making it from you directly? Are you going to be paying a fee to them? Or are they going to make it through advertising? Either way, you need to work out if this is suitable for you. If you're going to be paying them a fee, is it worth it? And remember, you'll have to take that fee off any investment returns that you make. This will let you work out whether it's actually worth it or not. So platforms are just like another layer. They're a place to store your wrappers that contain your funds, that contain your investments. Just like a shelf would store your multi-pack of individual packets of licorice all sorts. I mean, that sounds like a great shelf to me because I really like licorice all sorts, as you've probably guessed by now. And I think licorice all sorts are the best investment. But anyway, that's not really the point. The point is that it's just another layer on top of the actual investment itself. Now, I know I've touched upon this before, but I just want to go back to it and look at the difference between saving and investing. Most people usually mean the same thing when they say saving or investing, or think the words mean the same thing and use them interchangeably, and I'm guilty of it too. But there is actually a difference. Investing is used when you have long-term goals in mind, and where your money or capital increases or grows over time by compounding your interest and returns and through growth in the value of your investment. For example, if your shares or property increase in value the longer you hold them. On the other hand, saving is for short-term goals, typically 2 years or less, like saving towards a car, a holiday, or if you're planning on buying a house soon and need to save for a deposit. And we're going to be talking about this in more detail as we build our financial framework, but savings should be very low risk. That's because you're going to need them in a short period of time. So you don't want to risk investing them in something like the stock market, where the value of your investment can decrease just when you need your money the most. And because you want to be able to access your funds fairly easily, you don't want to invest your money in something that can be hard for you to turn back into cash when you need it most. So investing in property is out the window as well. Therefore, savings are held as cash in a savings bank account or something similar. But because these pay very low rates of interest and usually less than inflation, your savings will not grow in real terms, and are actually likely to decrease in value in real terms. Now, we've looked at the effects of inflation before, so you all know that say you manage to get a 1.5% rate of interest on a savings account and you put £100 in there, you'd get £1.50 interest, meaning you'd have £101.50 in cash in your bank account at the end of the year. However, inflation is likely to be higher than 1.5%, which means that it will be worth actually less next year in today's money. Now, if that doesn't make sense, have another listen to the inflation episodes. This is also why with long-term investing goals, investing in cash for a long period of time is not a good idea, because your wealth won't be able to grow to meet your goals. So savings are generally short-term and in cash, and investments are normally long-term and in other assets like shares and property. Savings are also used for an emergency fund, something which is one of the most important parts of your financial framework, as it protects your financial health. Now, we're going to be talking about this lots more in future episodes, but it is basically a pot of cash that you should put by in case the shit hits the fan. How much will depend on you, but it's usually enough to cover 3 to 6 months of your expenditure if you weren't able to work. Right, well, I think that's enough for this episode. We've covered quite a few topics, and some beyond just what platforms and wrappers are. The important things to remember are that wrappers hold your investments, they aren't the actual investments themselves. They also protect your investments from tax, and the main ones are pensions and ISAs. Platforms hold your different wrappers and make it easier to see them all in one place and to make changes. Savings are usually held as cash for emergency funds or short-term goals. Investments are usually held as other assets and will hopefully grow to help you meet long-term goals. And together, savings and investments will help you achieve financial health. After listening to this episode, a good idea is to have a look at what wrappers or platforms you might already have. Google what platforms are out there and have a look at how they work and what the charges are. Then try and find one of each of the four different types of ISAs. Remember, cash, stocks and shares, lifetime ISAs, and innovative finance ISAs are the different types. How do each of these work and what are the typical fees that you might pay on them? And remember, how an ISA works will also depend on the provider. Now have a look at the money that you currently have. How are you holding it? What is the split between savings and investments? Does this seem right for your personal circumstances? So what's in store for next week? Well, next week, we're going to be talking about one of the biggest potential detriments to your financial health, debt. But we're also going to look at the other side too. We're going to look at how debt can actually be useful in helping you achieve your financial health as well. This will help us further our understanding of the tools that are there to help us build our financial framework and the barriers that we face in doing so. In the meantime, remember that if you've got any questions, you can always get in touch with me via the contact page at pennyradio.co.uk or emailing me at james@pennyradio.co.uk. And if you go to the website, you'll also be able to find links to Penny Radio's Facebook and Twitter accounts. And if you give me a follow on those, you'll be able to stay up to date with the latest news from Penny Radio. And if you have a spare 5 minutes, I'd really appreciate it if you could leave a review on whatever podcast platform you listen to Penny Radio on. It will really help me to make the show better and to help reach more people to help them master their money. Thanks very much for listening to this episode of Penny Radio. Take care and see you next time. Thank you for tuning in to Penny Radio. Join me next time where we'll be continuing the journey to help you master your money.